This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin the Tuesday morning edition. It is VSiN by the Books. I am Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. My man, it is beautiful here on the Tennessee-Kentucky border. I woke up today, checked the weather as I do each and every day. We're in the 50s already, my man. Look, I'm pretty bad about this. I know I didn't want to tell you, but I had to off the top of the show. I'm already looking at Kenny Perry's golf course, which is about 5 minutes from where we sit right here in Franklin, Kentucky.
Yes.
So I think I'm going to get up there today to the range, Jensen. I feel like what you guys must feel like before you get to spring training and down there in February. Like, did you ever do anything before spring training? Or was like, no, you just waited until you had to report, and that's when you really started?
Well, for me, and now I was living in Scottsdale, so you know, from being out in the desert, you know, there really is no winter. You wake up on New Year's Day, you know, it's a solid 61 degrees, and you know, maybe you get a little heat wave up into the low 80s. That was the thing that I wanted to make sure of, was that I had already kind of ramped up a little bit. I didn't like coming in and having the, hey, you know, I'm just going to kind of ease into it. I wanted to kind of be ready. If you needed me to throw an inning on the first day of our side sessions, our bullpen sessions, I kind of wanted to be ready to go at that point. But as far as the golf goes, that was an automatic for the first 2 weeks. Because Dave, our days, so you'd come in, I'd do early work, do some cardio, get a lift in. If I was throwing a side session that day, I'd wait to lift and run till after for obvious reasons. And then we were probably done at the facility by noon, 12:30. And you had tee time at 1:15. Go play 9, get the barbecue out and go. I mean, it was pretty good. So now we just do that routine without the throwing, without the running.
Yeah.
We do still lift, and then we just grill on the patio here at home. That's what we do.
It's not a bad substitute at all. I like where you're going with that each and every day, Jensen. We got a great show lineup on this Tuesday. Of course, Matt Youmans, as he's kind enough to do, gets up early with us here in Las Vegas time. He's going to join us later on this hour. Hoops Peterson as well from the desert to get his best bets in college basketball. And Zachary Cohen, let's talk some NBA with Zach as well. And we're going to get some Major League Baseball futures. I've got a couple plays in already. I'll be very curious if you like where my head's at there. And of course, so much to get to in the NFL. And that's where we begin today's highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
So on this sixth day of January, there are currently 6 head coaching vacancies, and there are currently 2 GMs that need to be filled as well. Normally, those 2 spots, you would want to get the GM before you get the head coach. Well, they've got the GM out there in Las Vegas. They don't have a head coach. Pete Carroll was shown the door. He was fired. There is a distinction to be made here. At 3-14, after 1 year out there in the desert, Tom Brady, of course, is going to be involved in that coaching search now going forward. Jensen, we felt like maybe for a guy like Pete, who's a Super Bowl champion, of course, we know about the success at USC as well. Maybe one of the best you can make short list of coaches, college and pro, that we've had in the last 3 decades, that maybe there'd be one of those amicable situations where you say, we're going to retire. He was removed from his duties. Pete wanted to come back, and the Raiders said no. Where do the Raiders go from here? And we felt like this was coming, but I just wonder, did they really give him a shot in the 1 year out there in the desert?
Yeah, well, I think you're seeing the influence, too, probably of Tom Brady. You know, Mark Davis is probably going to be heeding a lot of what the greatest of all time has to say. You can bet on it, as we all know, on who the next head coach of the Raiders will be. And, Dave, as we wake up here this morning, DraftKings has Brian Flores at plus $1.75 to be the next head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. Remember, we heard some rumors over the weekend that Tom Brady perhaps wanting to do Patriot Way West of getting the band back together, with Flores the head coach, Brian Daboll as potentially the offensive coordinator, which to me, if you're going to go draft Fernando Mendoza, I mean, Brian Daboll's the right guy to do it. Instead of being the head coach for Brian Daboll, now go back to where he has been so good as the OC. Great friend of the program, watches us every day, Mike Florio, kind of confirming that that's where the favorites are at right now. So very intrigued to see as we have, what, six openings now, potentially more later on this week. But yeah, that doesn't surprise me considering that Tom Brady is going to have a heavy influence on where the Raiders eventually go.
At the other desert, Arizona has made a coaching change as well. You know, they ended the year on a 9-game losing skid for Jonathan Gannon and his club. Their last win, Dallas Cowboys. I came up one win short for my win total for the Cowboys. Do that math. After 3 years, and it didn't go well, 4 wins his first year, 8 wins, 8-9 in year two, and then this year again, 9-game losing skid to end it, 3-14. I always say you have to look at your side of the ball as a head coach. What do you do well? He's a defensive-minded guy coming over from Philadelphia. The defense really did fall apart this year. I don't think we're ultimately that surprised. Again, we'll figure out what they do with Kyler Murray and who's going to be next there, a quarterback and head coach, but it does feel like a revamping there in the other desert.
Yeah, I wonder too, Dave, who is attracted to this job? And I say that with an under. Let's first start with the cap. They're probably, as they sit here today, they're about $44 million as far as where their cap space is going to be. So it's not a lot, but again, we know that these organizations like to kind of wheel and deal a little bit. They're going to pick high in the draft, as we know, but honestly, what are you looking for? If we are moving on from Kyler Murray, is your answer, you know, via trade? Is it in this draft? Like, I think those are the things that organization and the ownership have to address first. Do we want to go to an offensive coach? If so, how much are we giving that coach their voice of what quarterback they want? Because I think that's where it begins. The defense suffered so many injuries. I know we'll jump into it in more detail coming up, but is that kind of where you're at? Like, they're right in the middle as we sit here today. A free agency started today. They're kind of right in the middle of the NFL as far as what their salary cap space availability is.
Yeah, and to me, it's time at the quarterback position. You know, Brissett is not a starting quarterback. I think they proved that over the last 9 weeks. He's capable as a backup. Kyler Murray, it just feels like that is done. It's worn itself out. So I don't know what the changes are going to be there, but they are going to be wholesale, at least in that quarterback room, it feels like, to really change up the culture there, and they do. You're right, they have to be defense first, but what is the next identity of the head coach? We have no idea until the Cardinals figure out, do they want to go offense now? Which is what they did with Kingsbury before, and then they went defense with Gannon, and that didn't work out either. So interesting times out there for the Arizona Cardinals. How about for the Bengals? I know people are perplexed by this, that Zach Taylor is coming back, Al Golden's coming back after 1 year as the DC, and Duke Tobin as their top exec is coming back. And so people are like, boy, this is the definition of insanity, trying the same thing over and over again. I push back on that a little bit. Again, I talk about what is your unit. When Joe Burrow is healthy, that unit arguably is one of the best in football that Zach Taylor has overseen. Where are you in the Bengals and no change there in the Natty?
So I just, that you had the operative question. When Joe Burrow is healthy, he's got his money. What's the motivation now? I mean, he clearly lost the fire, the love, if you will, even though he played through the end of the season. There's something to be said about, if I'm Zach Taylor, I'm spending a day or so with Joe Burrow of like, what do you need, man? Like, where are we? We've done this for many years now together. We have your weapons. But what ultimately is going to reignite where you were, whether when you came in the league or when you felt before all the injuries and stuff, what do we need to do to get you back there? And then I go from there. As far as what they're going to be able to do this offseason, Dave, they have the seventh most cap space headed into the offseason as we sit here right now. So they're in a position, if they want to go add some pieces, relatively speaking, they have flexibility to do it. So go start with the guy that you know, again, is makes your engine run there, win healthy, and then really be able to kind of catapult from there.
I mean, just an idea. I'd maybe fortify that offensive line so that that guy can stay healthy. I mean, that's the one perplexing thing for me. If I'm the Bengals in the front office, it's just do everything you can to keep that guy upright, and then maybe we won't be asking about your job security this time next year. This was interesting down there in South Beach because they don't have a GM right now. Chris Greer has been fired. They do have a head coach. That's Mike McDaniel. McDaniel says he's still the head coach until told otherwise, and he's going to help out in the GM search. Well, the GM might be looking at quarterback because Tua Tagovailoa, we know about the big deal he's got. He said quote, it would be dope if he could get a fresh start. He used the term dope, which is such a kid's term, right? Oh, man, that's dope. So, yeah, that's what he said. And I quote, that would be dope. I would be good with it. Asked if he is looking for a fresh start. Jensen, I'm never going to tell a guy that if you're employed by somebody, maybe that's not what the employer would want to hear. Tua, is that actively asking to get out of the situation in South Beach?
I mean, in so much as you can read into it, and I guess he also politely declined to speak beyond what he said there. This is a masterclass in what not to do at a podium or in an interview, kids. If you want to be removed from employment quite quickly in the real world, that's what will happen should you make those comments. The problem here, Dave, is he's a one-trick pony. There's no mobility. He's had all the concussions. And you have an absolutely horrific contract there. So how are you moving on from that besides buying it out and doing what you have to do? Dolphins already in a world of hurt as far as the salary cap space. They're already $6 million over. So there's going to have to be some movement of pieces and probably some big ones there for Miami to get flexibility again.
Yeah, and we've run that throughout the football season. A lot of sound from Tua. When he was a starting quarterback, and we went, why would you say that at the podium? I mean, he has some of these moments where you go, because, again, quarterback, leader of the team, and you go, why would you say that? So sometimes very perplexing what we hear from Tua Tagovailoa. I don't think that's going to sit well, whether it's Troy Aikman, whether it's Stephen Ross, the owner, when they hear something like that. Much more to get to, and we'll get to some NBA trade rumors as well. Maybe Trae Young could be on the move there in the ATL. But when we come back, let's talk about those six openings right now currently for head coaching and two from the GM side. And, of course, we got Super Wild Card Weekend, six games on the docket. I was asked some questions today by the security guards when I walked in, Jensen. I'll tell you what they asked me when you come back right here on Visa by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here with you. We always talk about making smarter bets, and smart advertisers are doing the same thing with Mission Media. If you want real results, you can get them with Mission Media. They're going to connect you, your brand, with audiences that actually engage. So from premium podcasts, connected TV, to data-driven digital campaigns, they're going to deliver measurable ROI. And as VSiN's exclusive ad partner, Mission Media is going to give you direct access to one of the most loyal, action-oriented sports audiences anywhere. Your brand deserves more than impressions. It deserves influence. Get started at VSiN.com/advertise or email advertising@VSiN.com. I mentioned that as I walk in this morning, Jensen Lewis, right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. Love the people here that work before this casino is even open. 9 o'clock local time here in Central Time Zone. And today, Jensen, you know, normally I get a Ravens question. I got another security guard that's a Bills fan, so I get the Josh Allen foot question. Today, and it did, it stopped me dead in my tracks. One of the security guards asked me, he said, excuse me. I said, yes. He goes, can I ask you a question? I said, absolutely. Who's going to win between the Bears and the Packers? And it, as simple a question like that, and there was two other guards waiting for my answer. And Jensen, all I'm thinking is 6-point teasers, what we do every day. I would tease the +1 up to +7. And then you have to stop and just go, no. Who's going to win the game? And I didn't have an answer for him. And I said, can I get back to you on that after the show? And, you know, that's where I get, Jensen. Sometimes we're so caught up in our numbers and what we think the correct side should be as that game is flipped back and forth between zero. And sometimes you get to the NFL playoffs and the six games, the question is simply, who do you think is going to win? And I think a lot of these games, when you have four home dogs here out of the six games, I don't know that the answer is as simple as the question can be.
Yeah, Matt Hasselbeck actually was listening to him on a different network yesterday, just kind of driving around and getting some ideas for the show today. He made a great point, and this bears out a lot when we did our Major League Baseball predictions, and then when we got to the postseason, you have the old adage, okay, who's kind of hot right there entering the postseason, last couple of weeks of the regular season, you know, who's trending well? Sometimes the body of your work in the regular season can literally mean nothing when you get to October in baseball and now here into the postseason in the NFL. And he kind of reiterated that. And a great friend of the show, Colin Coward, watches us every morning getting ready for his show. He was really like, hey, the Rams are just going to take care of the Panthers. And what I found fascinating is Matt Hasselbeck stopped him in his tracks. And he said, what do you mean? He goes, I wouldn't be shocked if Carolina kind of plays their best game because everyone's overlooking them. Everyone is already saying, oh, it's the Rams, it's the Super Bowl contenders. They're one of the best teams, if not the Seahawks, blah, blah, blah. So I kind of buy into that a little bit as someone who's played at the highest level. To me, that is also part of the handicap here too. There's a lot of teams right now that feel like they've accomplished a lot, but really haven't. And then vice versa is true. Did Carolina back in? Sure. Did they play their best game to finish the season? No. But now they're on house money and they're at home.
Right.
And so I'd be a little leery too of just auto betting the Rams to cover and blow the doors off them. Do I think they can win the game? Yeah, absolutely. But therein lies your point of all bets are off. They call it wild card weekend for a reason. And I'm pretty sure we're going to have at least an upset, if not two.
That game is up to 10, by the way. I'll give you these quick numbers here. We're going to break these down with Matt Youmans coming up in the next segment. We'll get into each and every one of these games as the show goes on today. Rams are up to 10. 46.5 is the total there. The Bears have flipped back to a 1.5 favorite here over the Packers. That game has given me so much consternation here early in the week. 45.5 is the number there. Bills are still the road favorite against the Jaguars at 1.5, 51.5. The Niners are now getting 4.5 against the Eagles in the City of Brotherly Shove. That total is 44.5. And the Chargers still getting 3.5. That one's holding right there. And that number is up to 46.5. Surprises me a little bit. An uptick on the to the over here when I'm looking at the under. And the Steelers on Monday Night Football right now, home dog of 3. There are some 3.5s out there as well. But 3 is what we're seeing here, 39.5. So we'll get to those games in greater detail. But again, sometimes ask yourself, before you look at the numbers like we look at, because that's what we do, who's going to win the game? Ask yourself that question. See if you can come up with that answer. I don't think it's as easy as you might think. There are a lot of teams looking for new coaches today because they did not get the answers to the questions to how to win more games and be in the postseason. 6 current openings right now: Arizona, Atlanta, Cleveland, the Raiders, New York Giants, and Tennessee Titans. 2 GM openings right now that are correlated. 1, the Falcons are looking for a GM and a head coach because Terry Fontenot got shown the door with Raheem Morris. Chris Greer, as I mentioned, with the Dolphins, has been gone for quite some time, and yet they still have Mike McDaniel there. That is very curious to me. So, Jensen, sometimes the chicken and the egg theory, I don't think it should be much of a debate. We've seen this done before where coaches get hired and then the GM comes in. I always find that to be very odd. I don't think that's what the Dolphins are going to do. But remember, Troy Aikman is being asked by Stephen Ross, the owner, to come in to help facilitate that. And then we heard from Mike McDaniel and said, hey, I'm the coach as long as I'm the coach, and I'll help look for the next guy. Sounds like a guy that's pretty confident he's going to be retained. What do you make of that? Because to me in Miami, I don't know that that's a good place to start.
Well, for me, if I'm Mike McDaniel, I'm doing everything possible to strengthen my allies, to bolster my relationships in key decision-making areas. So it doesn't shock me that he is kind of doing that. Oh, I'm happy to help. Of course you are, because you want to stay. You want to be a good right. servant. I've never subscribed, and you know, you and I have been around some great GMs. In Marty Herney, our own right here, has had fabulous insight. Even in other sports, you know, we're good friends with Steve Phillips, Jim Bowden on the baseball side. Very different personalities as far as how they operate,
that's right.
But those guys, you know, would tell you hand over fist. You have to start from the top down. Because the difference, and we're going to find this out. Marty Herney brought this up yesterday about Matt Ryan. There is so much you have to do in the role that Matt Ryan is going into in that front office spot, like that would be asking you and me to step right into, you know, the United States cabinet positions with no experience right. doing the job, and then be tasked with being able to, you know, run the economy or be able to defend the homeland. And that's just, that's very, very hard to do and pick it right up. So just kind of roundaboutly here, I don't know how you can think that the coach getting the job first is the smart way to do business before you have that top down and that foundational aspect of the front office already in tow.
Oh, I love that rationale because I'm with you. I look at it and go, first of all, if you're going for a job, kids, if you're out there and you're looking for work, they say, can you do this job? The answer is always yes. Whether you can do it or not, the answer is always yes, because you can do on-the-job training. But Jensen, I totally agree. Sometimes I look at this and I go, is the person qualified for this job? It's hard because sometimes you're not a second-time GM or a second time. You got to be a first time at some point. It's going to be that first time. That's why a lot of these quote-unquote retreads, we talk about with quarterbacks all the time in the league. I do think you can get better the second time around as a head coach and or a GM. Just because you fail the first time doesn't mean you're going to fail the second time. What about that point of it? And I'll get to a couple guys. Stefanski is going to be a hot name out there now that the Browns have let him go. We hear he's already going to be in talks with the Giants and or Tennessee, right? I look at a guy like Mike McCarthy and I go, I think he can do a lot worse than a Mike McCarthy for one of these six openings. Do you want to go with the young, hot coordinator that's never done it before and had to run all these things? And the point about the GM, and Marty Herney's such a kind guy, and I hope if you didn't listen to the program yesterday, go back wherever you get your podcast, watch and listen in your time. Marty was basically telling you it's not that easy, former players, to hop in and become a general manager. It's very different. That does seem to be a trend happening in the NFL. We have seen successful examples of it. Maybe the most successful one is Ozzie Newsome back in his Ravens days. I thought Ozzie did an amazing job of running that front office, right? But I think that's more the exception than the rule, right?
I would agree. And I think the modern day example would be John Lynch there for the 49ers. Yes. I mean, he has, it feels like seamlessly transitioned and been so good. It takes now he's an Ivy League guy. It takes intelligence and a bandwidth to handle so many of the things that are being thrown at you. Oh gosh, just like he did the secondary. But to Marty's point, I think there is something to be said. Can you manage people? Well, quarterbacks feel like they've been able to manage everybody. You know, catchers in baseball, similar thing. They have to do both sides of the ball. So there has been a level of experience with the personnel. But how many times, Dave, do we hear first-time head coaches that go back to being coordinators say, man, there was so much that I did not realize. Media responsibility, all the other things that go with not being in the room that you're accustomed to being in 24/7, for lack of a better explanation. It is so specialized as a coordinator, but man, your umbrella is so large as a head coach.
I think the exact same thing. And I think about it with a Jonathan Gannon and I go, if there's an opening for a defensive coordinator, that might be a guy I want to look at. Head coach?
Yes.
Maybe not. We'll see. We'll see what it's very different here. So people, before you look at these teams, realize, can these guys, whoever these quote-unquote retreads might be, would they be better the second time? Could they handle it the first time? Matt Heumann's going to always handle the questions we have. We're going to ask him some about the NFL wildcard weekend next, right here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books on this Tuesday morning. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here. Jensen, whenever you're in town, obviously it's like the star, the prodigal son comes back to the Tennessee area here in the Nashville area. We had Stormy Bonantoni was here on Friday to do Money Moves, and it was like a big star being in town there. And I mentioned that when Matt Heumann was in town in December, I mean, people actually followed us to Nashville just to see Matty Heumann here getting out of the desert, kind enough to join us each and every Tuesday. Does a great job. VSiN primetime, 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern here, nightly in the network. Give him a follow on X at Matt Heumann's 247 Friday Football Invitational. Matt, we got a lot to get to here for Super Wildcard Weekend, but I got to ask you, Patrick Maher takes us down here, and you and I are in pole position to try to win this thing, the first ever VSiN NFL Futures forecast that we had back in August. You got 6 out of 10 right. It was a really positive ROI, but not good enough to get first place. How do you assess your performance in the first ever draft?
Well, we could talk for all 10 minutes about this, but we don't have that much time. I will say that Steve Cohen came up with the idea at the network. I thought it was a great idea. We could probably tweak the rules a little bit. And if Jensen Lewis gets his wish, we're going to have a baseball draft coming up, which I think would be a cool thing to do. Yeah, that'd be a cool thing to do. And I mean, let's face it, Jensen is going to be an odds-on favorite if we do that. I don't know how anyone yes. could beat him. But as far as the football draft goes, I hate player props. I really hate them. And we had to pick 4 player props, and I went 0-4 on the player props. And now you know why I hate them. I went 6-0 on the win totals and division bets. And I'm not going to expand on all this, but I'll say to Dave, you did well. You did really well. Tim Murray did. I finished 2nd. And Patrick Maher beat us because he had Jonathan Taylor 13-1 to win have the most rushing touchdowns. And Dustin Sweetelson told me something interesting that he said Patrick did not do much prep for the draft. And Dustin actually gave Patrick. Dustin gave him the Taylor 13-1 prop. So you got to give Dustin some credit. That's like a team entry there. But Dave, I thought it was also ironic that the Cowboys bit the hand that feeds them. And Dave Ross, Super Dave Ross, lifetime Dallas Cowboys fan, was probably going to win this draft if Dak Prescott leads the NFL in passing yards. And no Cowboys quarterback had ever led the league in passing yards. And Dak had a 40-yard lead going into Sunday. And I jokingly sent you a text at halftime. I said, I think it's time for Dak to take a seat. Let's see what we got in this young backup quarterback. And I didn't think he would actually sit. And he sat the 2nd half, and that cost you the championship. And I don't know what the winner gets, maybe a $10 gift certificate to the VSIN store. What's the winner get?
I would think Barry's saying. But, you know, Jensen, you know what that tells me? It tells me that Matt Eumanns has a direct line to Brian Schottenheimer. That's what that tells me. He had him pulled at halftime.
That's funny. Well, the guy that ends up beating Dak, right, it ends up being Matthew Stafford. And yeah, Matty, that's where I want to start with you here. You and I, again, looking at very intriguing trends here. And let me throw this out to you because I think this is where you're getting for that Rams and Panthers game. Panthers right now, 10-point underdogs. They are playing an opponent outside their division. There is an active trend right now that I found. And when Carolina is at home, they're an underdog of at least more than 7 points. And they are playing a non-divisional opponent. They have covered in 7 of the last 10 instances, including 6 consecutive. I tend to agree with you here. I looked at that and I said, you got to be kidding me. On the road, and just kind of what I saw here the last couple of games from the Rams, the Panthers are on house money, are they not?
Well, also, you're talking about this trend. The Panthers finished 8-9. I don't really like this team, but they finished 8-9, and all 8 wins were in the underdog role. And, of course, in a pretty big dog role here, catching a DraftKings plus 10 minus 108. And, Jensen, what you said about the Rams is true because I don't really like the way they're playing down the stretch. Actually went 3-3 in the last 6 games. They did lose those 3 games by a total of 7 points. So those were games that went down to the wire. But the Rams struggled with the Cardinals on Sunday. And I thought I laid 7 with the Rams in the middle of the week. I thought it was smart by Sean McVay to play as starters. I thought the Rams needed a get-right game. And, man, they were lucky to pull away in the 2nd half and win that game. That was the Cardinals team that lost 9 in a row to finish the season. The first time these teams met, Stafford threw 2 picks. One was a pick 6. Carolina rushed for 169 yards in that game. And the Panthers can run it with Chuba Hubbard and Rico Dowdle. And let's see what Carolina won that game on November 30th, 31-28. Now, Devontae Adams is going to come back here from the hamstring injury. Led the league with 14 touchdown catches. But I made this number about 8, so I'll take the 10 here. Because the Panthers play well in the underdog role, and I think it's a bit tricky for the Rams to lay this type of number in the first round on the road on the East Coast against a Panthers team that plays well in this type of situation. The first only Super Bowl futures bet I made over the summer was Rams at 30-1, and I bet that either at the end of April or early May, right around the NFL draft, And obviously got a really good number with that at Circa at the time. But, man, I just do not like the way the Rams defense is playing here at the end of the season. And I think it's going to be a struggle for them in the playoffs.
Matt, that's the first game on the board here for Super Wildcard Weekend. The last game is the Monday night game. Steelers back in prime time. We know their record there is pretty gaudy, having lost since the 90s on Monday Night Football there in the Steel City. You and I were on them last week. It was sweaty, but it gets home there at the end against the Ravens. Are you on them again this week?
I am going to be on the Steelers again. And you're right. How wild was that game Sunday night in Pittsburgh?
My goodness.
I mean, it's insane. But when you look at the box score, Pittsburgh actually outgained the Ravens 390 to 359. Had 24-12 first down edge, no turnovers, 34 minutes time of possession. Aside from the game in Cleveland, the Pittsburgh offense actually performed at a relatively high level, I'd say, in the last four or five games. So yeah, throughout the game in Cleveland, which was Aaron Rodgers' worst performance of the season. DK Metcalf comes back, right? And Jaylen Warren and Kenneth Gainwell are really doing a lot of different things to help this Steelers offense move. They're helping Aaron Rodgers, passes out of the backfield, running the ball. A lot of things making this Pittsburgh offense more effective, because Rodgers obviously can't make all the plays he used to make, and you can see that when he gets out of the pocket, he can't run a whole lot right now. But I've talked about the Steelers' edge in yards against Ravens, and that was a Ravens offense with Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. They were both playing well in that game. This Houston offense with C.J. Stroud doesn't really put much fear into me. And you talk about the Houston defense, you say, well, this is a nasty Texans defense. That defense allowed 21.8 points over the last four games against the Colts, Cardinals, Raiders, Chargers. The Texans probably should have lost that home game to the Raiders a couple of weeks ago. So I took 3.5 here with the Steelers. Right now it's, I think it's 3.5 minus 115 if you're going to play it. But I do like the Steelers. And that Monday night trend, something's going to be talked about for the next 7 days, because the Steelers do not lose home games on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, certainly do not. Matt, let me throw an idea out to you a couple of days away here from getting the semifinals of the college football playoff underway. We get the Fiesta Bowl on Thursday night, Miami Ole Miss, and then the Peach Bowl of Oregon and Indiana. Quite the revenge angle for the Ducks against the Hoosiers there on the other semifinal. We don't usually tease, but can we believe that both these games are one possession games? I have a hard time getting away, and I have my 32-33-1 national championship ticket on Miami, so I will be monetizing and trying to double dip a little bit here on Ole Miss. But are we possibly able to look at Oregon teased up to 9.5, Ole Miss teased up to 9.5? Is that something you'd entertain, or you stay away from it altogether and think that both these games could be quite close?
Yeah, I'd never tease college football. And, you know, if you say, well, I'm going to make an exception here, then you end up making an exception there, and then an exception somewhere else, I just don't do it. Unless I like 2 7-point favorites, I'm going to tease down to minus one. I'm not going to do it. You know, a lot of people thought last week, oh, you could tease Texas Tech. Well, Texas Tech got beat 23-0. So even though these look like they're going to be pretty tight games on paper, I wouldn't do it. Jensen, if you're going to play those teasers, you'd probably want to tease it up 6.5 to plus 10 too, and not 9.5, just to make sure if you're going to play it. But I kind of like Ole Miss in this game. Now, I'm not going to put out any official plays on these games yet, because I've still been reading about them, still thinking about them. You know, you got to do some critical thinking about how you think these games are going to play out. I'm leaning towards both dogs, Oregon at 3.5, Ole Miss at 3.5, but I'm not convinced yet. And, we're not going to have enough time to break these down. Tim Murray and I are going to talk about these on the VSIN College Football Podcast later today. But my lean right now is to both dogs, and I've got some reasons behind those, but I'm far from convinced. You know, I've been driving this Kurt Cignetti Indiana bandwagon for a long time. It's really tough to bet against the Hoosiers.
It really is. And if you're driving the car, then I'm sure Wes Reynolds is riding shotgun. Matt, you're the best. Appreciate it, man. We'll catch up again soon and talk and give him a listen and watch he and Tim on VSiN Primetime as well. When we come back, let's break down those wildcard weekends. Some numbers that are changing there. We'll get to some of those when you come back with us right here. It's VSiN by the Books.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. You want to bet smarter in this new year? Well, right now, you can do so at VSiN.com. You can check out our articles. We're going to have Greg Hoops Peterson on to talk college basketball. He's got his best bets already up. Steve Mackin, he's got his traits for Super Bowl winners. What is he identifying to get to the winner's circle there? Nigel Seeley, you want some EPL best bets? Nigel's got those covered for you as well. Later on today, you can check out Tyler Shoemaker's men's and women's college basketball projections and picks. Zachary Cohen's got his NBA best bets. Zach's going to join us later on in the program today. Jonathan Davis, the Iceman cometh with his NHL picks and props. You can get full Visa Pro access for as little as $9.99 for your first 30 days. See all the options that we have at VSiN.com/subscribe. Always great to have Matt Humans on in the last segment talking NFL football, college football as well. Very quickly, I'm glad you touched on that, Jensen. That Indiana game, by the way, is down to 3.5. Remember, this is 4.5, and we're seeing 4s and 3.5. So Oregon money starting to come in a little bit there. Ole Miss sitting at getting 3.5 against Miami. And for the people that don't know about your ticket there, on Miami, you got them north of 30-1 to win the national championship. And you mentioned something with Matt that I think is important to detail, that you can then play Ole Miss plus 3 in the hook, and you've created a 3.5-point middle. I get where your brain's at with that teaser option. Matt's one of those, that's no-fly zone, right? He's not going to do it because he's not going to break that rule, because he feels like once he goes below the hard decks, he might go below the hard decks again. So I understand that hard and fast rule. But in your situation, Jensen, does that change it for you because you have such a nice juicy ticket on Miami and maybe you do want to expand it a little bit to have a little bit more breathing room?
Yeah, and my thought process is twofold. I've thought of two ways of how to monetize in this round on Thursday. So what I'll likely do is play sort of a double up on the money line. So not only would I get my original wager back, but then I'd already double my money, no matter the result. If Ole Miss wins, I've already, you know, been over 100% ROI on the ticket and can go from there. If Ole Miss ends up losing but covers in that teaser, now I have not only more money in pocket, but then I can figure out whatever I want to do with Oregon and Indiana. And whether I want to, you know, come back on the other side, have a nice 9.5-point middle there. If I want to take, you know, a little Indiana money line, a lot of different ways to set up. And then whoever, you know, if it is Oregon, and I haven't looked at the look ahead lines just yet for potential national championship matchups, Dave. But that to me would be, actually, let me look at them right now. Okay, here we go. So Indiana would be a 5.5-point favorite over Miami, money line of 225. At that point, I'd probably reevaluate and see how much, if I wanted to hedge, how much I'd want to go into Indiana money line on that. If Miami were to play Oregon, then Miami would only be a 1.5 dog. Oregon actually would be a 1.5 favorite minus $1.22 on the money line in those hypothetical national championship lines. So that is a drastic difference, thus kind of making me look back at these feel and kind of play out like some NFL playoff games. That's one way to look at it. But bar none, will likely have at least standalone something on Ole Miss plus the points and maybe on the money line, so that no matter the result, I got a chance to double dip, but at bare minimum, I will be making money on that long shot ticket.
There it is, people. That's the exercise right there that Jensen's laying out for you. So if you have some of those tickets, you've got some profit to be made, monetized. That's the key there. And I think you've already got a really good handle on exactly what to do. Excuse me. I know that we get choked up thinking of the NFL is going to be coming to an end here pretty soon as we begin the second season. The first season's already done. And I know they used to call it Super Wildcard Weekend. Now they've dropped the Super. You know, it's Jensen. It's kind of like I still call it Jacobs Field there, whatever they call it now in Cleveland. Like, you can call whatever you want as long as you're not associated with the naming rights there. So to me, it's still a Super Wildcard Weekend when you get 6 games on the docket. So we're going to get a couple on Saturday, 3 on Sunday, and then kick it off for the last time on Monday Night Football before we get to the divisional rounds. Let's start to look at some of those games. And we mentioned it with Matt in the last segment, the Rams and the Panthers. He's leaning towards the Panthers getting the double digits out there because his number that he's going to set is around 7.5. And right now you're getting 10.5s out there. They did dip below to 9.5 immediately went back up to that 10. I don't know how much it's going to change from that number here, Jensen, as we go forward. What is your take right now? Again, it feels like if you're back in the Panthers, you do have to hold your nose here. I don't know that they're live to win the game. Now, that's plus 440 on the money line. But they did beat them, and it wasn't that long ago right here, and it's a rematch in the same house.
I tend to agree with Matt on a couple of criteria. We have to factor in how a team looks, right, at least the last couple of weeks, and that's part of the handicap. Also, we have to remember that the slate is clean, Dave. Yes, what you've done in the regular season has put you in this at least seeding position, but there are a lot of teams that will come in on Monday and Tuesday, and that first bit of speech from the head coach is, we haven't done anything yet, boys. Great getting here. That's an achievement. You should be proud of it. But the old Kobe Ryan adage, job's not done. We've got to be able to go out and prove that we are that team that we showed in the regular season. And that's where I get to the Panthers, at least here. Haven't played it yet. But I feel that just them at home, they're going to hear all week about how the Rams are Super Bowl contenders, should be maybe the favorite behind Seattle or should be the favorite over Seattle. They should have no problem just decimating this Panthers defense. Well, I got news for you. There's two wide receivers in Tetero McMillan, Xavier Leggett. The one kryptonite for the Rams, at least in their secondary this year, Dave, has been large, tall, physical receivers. If somehow Bryce Young gets the ball out and has allowed them to be able to create in space, and if they have some semblance of a run game with Rico Dowdle and Chuba Hubbard there, they're going to hang around. And you're right, they may not win. But again, this is about the spread, playing the spread, and kind of where this game script matches up. If you limit possessions, if you play keep away, Panthers are live right here to cover. I don't know if they win, but certainly, Dave, I'd be hard-pressed to not at least give a second take or a second thought about looking at Carolina at least at plus 10.
Panthers could not run the football last week against the Buccaneers, and they still covered the number. I mean, think about that, right? They had zero running game, and yet they only lost by two. I don't know if they can repeat that. I think you're right. They'd have to get that ground game going a little bit here to open up those things to stay within that number. But it's certainly doable when you look at the Buccaneers. They did not play a great offensive football game, and yet their defense did keep them in there and only lost by two. And their defensive front, they are stout up front. So let's see if the Rams struggle to run the football and maybe have to do it all with Stafford through the arm, with the arm through the air. And they are capable of doing just that. You've got a stat of the day here. I like this lean that you have here. I want you to tell the people what that stat is. The only worry for me is I'm actually not hearing a lot of resistance, ironically, on the other side. Tell the people what you have.
I think for me, looking at coaching, it's such a huge part of how you evaluate playoffs and matchups in particular. I cannot get away from the Niners. I played them plus 4.5 at the Eagles. Again, here we go. What has convinced you watching the Eagles these last handful of weeks? We're like, yep, absolutely love them at home. Want to have them win by more than a field goal. This number, again, open 3.5. It's up to 4.5. I am well aware of where the Niners' injuries are. Guess what? It's been basically the entire season of what's happened. Mm-hmm. Are you telling me that back-to-back weeks, Christian McCaffrey is going to be as limited as he was against the Seahawks? Dave, you and I can objectively say that Seahawks defense, far and away, better than the Eagles defense. Now, it's not taking anything away from having to go into Philadelphia. And I have a little nugget for you in Daily Gridiron that you're going to be like, are you kidding me? And it has to do with the referee of that game. It is a wild, wild record thing that we will dive into. But again, I like coaching. I like where Kyle Shanahan can scheme. If somehow they are able to continue limiting an Eagles run game that has yet to really show me anything, you're asking for Brock Purdy, who's been arguably the hottest quarterback down the stretch, a bounce back from Christian McCaffrey, and a Niner team that has all the designs on, listen, we still have everything in front of us. The Super Bowl is in our own backyard. It's motivation enough. Fellas, we didn't get the job done for the one seed. That doesn't mean we can't go into Philadelphia and be able to sneak this one out.
It's getting to the point now. it's almost disrespectful right now what the number is in the Niners to win the conference. I'm with you. They're 15-1 right now to win the NFC. Okay, they are the longest long shot outside of the Panthers, obviously, in the entire conference. That's getting to the point. 4.5. I love the Niners side there. This is a revenge game from a couple years ago. Remember where Brock Purdy hurt his UCL and they didn't have a quarterback, right? Chris McCaffrey's running Wildcat. That's a game I feel like they felt like they should have won a couple years ago. Don't think that doesn't stick in the craw of Kyle Shanahan as well. I love where your head's at with that football game, and they might still be live if they get Trent Williams and maybe Warner back to play some defense. Hour number two straight ahead. We'll get to our highlights and headlines next.